Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Jeffrey Conley. I'm registration number 20384. I'm attorney for the appellant who has responded in the lower court and moving party on a motion to terminate maintenance. Sorry for my voice today. I'm not sure what happened, but I woke up with a full of hoarseness. May it please the court, there are two arguments that I'd like to emphasize from the brief. There are others, but the main points that I'd like to stress today are, one, that the trial court misapplied law when it failed to recognize Swing as some precedent for deciding the case before it. The trial court specifically distinguished Swing from the facts in the present case. So that's the one that's in the brief. That's the one argument I'd like to emphasize today. The second thing is that even if we assume that the court's findings of fact are correct, that is, if we just assume the numbers that the court determined as the incomes of the parties, the respective assets, etc., that in effect, that is an abuse of discretion. It's manifestly unfair, unjust, and it arises to an abuse of discretion if you accept those numbers that the trial court found to be as the incomes of the parties and the duration of the maintenance.
You're saying that the numbers that he found, which you said, even if we assume they are correct, are an abuse of discretion?
That's right.
Well, can you explain that?
Your Honor, what happened was the trial court made findings regarding the party's income. Now, we did make an argument about the fact that upon retirement, there is a shift necessarily that happens between income and assets. And I think it's been problematic for the courts when they're trying to decide what happens at retirement, because those, usually what you receive from retirement is, first of all, a separate property, and secondly, it's otherwise been divided and divorced once, and then you've earned that money or earned that retirement asset post-decree, or it's a distribution of those, the income is a distribution of those assets, so there's a shifting. So, Your Honor, the reason why, to get to the core of your question, which is, the findings of the trial court makes it manifestly unfair, is that when you look at the overall percentages of the court's order, now there is a dramatic change because the original order was 20% of husband's income. The final order of the trial court in the present case, was that upon retirement, that is when Mr. Dickey, the appellant, went from earning $300,000 in the original order to being retired. Then he was paying 48% of his income as calculated by the court. And that income was frankly a distribution of his assets. It was a distribution from a retirement asset, which I think complicates it. But if we just accept the fact that the court took the distribution that Mr. Dickey received plus his Social Security benefit, which is a total of approximately $12,500. But what the court found was, if you compute the numbers, his income totals $149,328. So his income was halved, even if we take the findings as true. And wife's income was $57,912, which is an increase of about double from what the original permanent orders assumed or imputed to wife as her income. We've argued that it's an abuse of discretion is because not only does it upon retirement, husband's paying a greater portion of his income upon retirement, but also that if you combine the gross incomes of the parties, if you take the numbers as true, the trial court found, and you combine those numbers, the wife is then receiving 63% of the overall income. So the wife receives after the court's order. So if we leave the trial court's order in effect, and what the trial court determined was, after maintenance, husband receives $77,328, and wife receives $129,912. So the net effect is, it's not an equalization of incomes. What it is redistribution of what we're calling income, but wife is receiving 63%.
But the council, the maintenance statute really doesn't talk about income, does it?
It does talk about income. Are you talking about the new statute?
I'm talking about the statute, the pre-existing statute.
It does discuss incomes. It's not a formula like we have now, but there is a. Are you saying?
Well, as I understand the statute, you consider all of the factors, all of the resources available, and we're to determine, and particularly looking at the husband's ability to meet his own needs while also meeting the needs of the spouse, in this case, the husband. Income is relevant, but it's not the determinator, is it? The determining factor?
Your Honor, I don't think it's a determining factor necessarily. But when you look at it, when you look at just the numbers, when you're saying you're taking the combined gross incomes of the party and you're giving to the recipient spouse 63% of the overall income of the parties, I don't know if we could find a case in Colorado where that's happened. And also we determined, when you ask about this statute, generally speaking, the temporary order statute had a formula where it's not to exceed 40%. That's the existing. The new statute talks about that we will not exceed 40% of the overall gross income of the
parties. But that doesn't apply.
It doesn't apply, you're right. Just for the legislature considered fair after the fact, it far exceeds that. And I don't think you can find a case where the recipient spouse's income is exceeding the overall gross income when you're just combining the incomes of the recipient spouse is receiving more income. That 63% is a high number. The other thing is that what we're saying is that abuse of discretion to go from that. Mr. Dickey was receiving an income at the time of the permanent order. His original order was $300,000 a year. It was computed on that to go to retirement where he was receiving zero earned income. So virtually all of the income is really a payment for his asset. I think the income discussion does get, it's a difficult task for the courts. And I think it's shown in our case law how the courts have talked about their cases where we exclude certain income in a maintenance case. We treat maintenance cases different than child support cases. And I think there's been a struggle in the case law. There's about what exactly is income. And I think the reason why that is, and the reason why I think swing is important, is because when retirement happens, we're necessarily shifting from what you're earning as income, what the payroll spouse earns, to what do they have in assets, and so we have a rule against redistributing assets. We don't want to redistribute assets. The Gray case talks about not using property from allocated to a spouse to pay to the other spouse maintenance. So that seems to be an unfair rule. I think the courts have recognized that in the case law. And that's also part of our new statute where we've recognized that if you have separate property, we don't want to redistribute property but keep your maintenance going. So there's a shift at the time of retirement. And I think that's why swing, I think, extended the discussion. Even though swing talked about a change in employment prior to retirement or the contemplation of retirement, the Swing court attempted to clarify the fact that retirement can be an event that is a substantial and continuing change. Now, are we asking this per se rule? No. And I think the appellees argued that we're saying that's a must modify. I don't think it has to be construed as a must modify, but I think the rules say that is that retirement, a good faith retirement at normal retirement age, can constitute a substantial and continuing change. And the reason why it's important in this case is because the court found that the maintenance would continue, that wasn't enough. And the swing case is important because the swing case, in our view, says that is important enough. That is a substantial and continuing change, at least a revisit. So you've met your threshold by retiring. And so what do we do after that is the question. So the swing case, I think the trial court, by saying that the trial court was not applying, I think that's the error the trial court made, because the swing is very, has language very strong about the fact that people have a right to retire and that they should be not penalized for that. If it's in good faith, that should constitute the grounds for modification.
Well, that's one of the conditions. The other condition, though, is that the original terms are unfair.
That's correct, that the original terms are unfair. But what I'm saying, what the trial court did here was, trial court set aside swing, or basically said, I'm not applying it, and then made an analysis, and then ultimately said, why it's so important is because the court ultimately said, I don't find the grounds to modify it, that there's not a substantial and continuing change, that I am not modifying the maintenance. So you have to ask then, after the trial court rule stands, what condition is there? Is there any? You know, what can warrant this? If you are earning $300,000 a year and the maintenance is based on that, and you retire and you're earning zero earned income, and that is not enough to meet the threshold, that's not enough to be a substantial continuing change in circumstances, then what is? And I think it is problematic because the statute is so open-ended of substantial continuing circumstances to make the current terms unfair. So the case law is, I think the case law, when you look at all the cases, they're all over the place about how do we interpret that, and I think rightly so. But the reason why swing is important is because swing specifically talks about retirement, and the trial court recognized, and counsel recognized, each counsel, that retirement cases, there are few and far between in Colorado, if any. I think the trial court recognized there are no cases, but then failed to apply that one single case that talks about retirement. I'll reserve the rest of my time unless you have a further question.
Thank you. You've got 2 minutes and 14 seconds.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors, and good afternoon. My name is James Waters. My registration number is 1126. I represent the appellee, Gina Dickey, who is also present here at council table with me. Dr. Dickey wanted to stop paying maintenance, so he did two things. He retired, and he jumped on this bandwagon of so-called national trends, national changes, none of which affected Colorado law, certainly didn't change Colorado law. Things can go on anywhere and not make a difference here. Yes, sir.
I'm not sure if I understood you, but are you saying he retired so that he wouldn't have to pay maintenance to Sticky?
We're not saying that the retirement was not in good faith.
Okay. That's what I was
curious. Because there have been two issues here. One is whether it's in good faith, and the other is whether the retirement was based on objective reasonableness. Those are two terms out of the Swain case. We don't dispute those at all. He's 67 years old, had health problems, so that's not a problem. We think Judge Robbins reached the right conclusion for the right reasons. He applied the standard that has been the law in Colorado for the entire 40 years that I've been practicing. This is a straightforward case. The maintenance was awarded in 1995. So the issue is, what has changed since then? What changed is that Dr. Dickey's retirement plan of $650,000 multiplied by four times due to his increased contributions and his testimony to some lucky investments he made over the years. And there's no distinction between what was principal and what was interest in that account. the entire thing is still there, it's still available. By comparison, Ms. Dickey's income increased by only the cost of living and the medical insurance, and both of those were in evidence and really not disputed. That four-pronged statute from 40 years ago says, has it been a change of circumstances? Has it been substantial? Has it been continuing? And is the effect to make the original award unfair? Yes, it was a change of circumstances. The change being Dr. Dickey's increase in the retirement fund. Was it substantial? Yes. Was it continuing? Yes. But did it make the original award unfair? Judge Robbins said no, and cases have unanimously given discretion to the trial judge in making that decision whether or not it was unfair. Now, in a typical divorce case, you have a situation similar to this. The husband's making about $50,000. He's paying maintenance, his living expenses, housing, food, so forth, and an employer provides a retirement fund. When he retires, he might be making a third of that, $15,000 or $20,000, and he has his house, car, maybe a savings account. But as a result, the standard of living is lower for both of them. And if they had remained married, the standard of living would have been lower for both. That situation would justify reducing the maintenance. But that situation did not apply here. Dr. Dickey increased that account so much, and Ms. Dickey was not able to. Judge Robin said she's not able to contribute, and even went back to Judge Hyatt's finding in 95, where he said she's not able to contribute to the other account.
Yeah. Are you saying the character of the original distribution, property distribution of Dr. Dickey changed because it grew? Are you saying the character is no longer his marital asset, his marital property?
We don't know what it was. There was no evidence on the point one way or the other. He was awarded approximately $650,000. He testified that he made some lucky investments and that he did continue to contribute to it, and so it grew to $2.7 million. What part of it grew, what became principal, what became interest, we don't know. It's all intermixed in there, and we don't have any way of sorting it out. There was no evidence presented or any offer of proof as to what was what in there.
So an improvement in an asset can run to the benefit of the other spouse, an increase in the value of the asset?
In this case, I believe...
Can be considered the basis for maintaining the maintenance award?
I believe so, because the maintenance statute does not speak to income exclusively. 1410.114.4 uses the term, and I quote, the ability of the spouse from whom maintenance is sought to meet his or her needs while meeting those of the spouse seeking maintenance, end quote. And several cases have held that that ability includes income, but it can include other assets as well. So income is not the see-all, do-all. It's not the end of the game, so to speak. Judge Hyatt's orders in 1995 were 35 pages long, one of the best sets of reading, I think, that I would commend to you. He found that the maintenance award was permanent, because he didn't place any limit on it at all. He said it's until death or remarriage. And Ms. Dickey treated the award as permanent. The Fisher case says that the court is allowed to award permanent maintenance. No one talked about retirement at that point. And Dr. Dickey could have asked the court something about retirement or could have tried to negotiate something. Nothing was ever said about it one way or another. The cases count as a factor whether retirement was foreseen or considered at the permanent orders hearing. If so, it could make a difference in modification because it was something that parties had at least been made aware of. That didn't happen in this case. Nothing was said, so there was no meaning to it whatsoever. Dr. Dickey's earnings, ranging from $300,000 to $400,000 per year from 95 all the way to retirement a couple of years ago, included his income, and that plus his investments, and all of the income since 1995, we submit, supports Judge Hyatt's finding in 1995 that that award was to be permanent, almost as if Judge Hyatt could foresee that this man was going to have plenty of assets, and not just income, but the status of the ability.
Counsel, I understand from the record he sold his part of his practice for $2.25 million approximately, is that right?
Yes, it is.
And is that part of this retirement amount?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because his testimony was that he spent it all. Paid some taxes, paid off his house, bought some cars for the children, perhaps bought a condo for one of them, and he says, I can't remember what happened to the rest of it, but none showed anywhere. We didn't know it ever happened until we did discovery in this case and found out that it was there. So it came, it got consumed, and it went. To our knowledge, that is not part of any investment account that he has that's being used now. The statute does not differentiate between earned income and unearned income, even if you were using income as the as a crucial factor in seeing whether he is capable of paying the maintenance. Now, this is a two or three step process. The maintenance statute incorporates the child support statute to get the definitions of income, and the child support statute includes everything. Pensions, retirement, the list is literally a page long. So in going through that two or three step process, you find everything that you could think of, all kinds of properties, assets, and so forth that can be used for purposes of establishing his ability to meet her needs. If the marriage has survived, given his assets and income at this point in time, the parties would still be living well, and Ms. Dickey would have the benefit of some of that. And in fact, they are living well because the courts have seen to it to protect Ms. Dickey with this maintenance award all these years. His income is more than ample to continue supporting both of them. Even though Judge Robbins did talk briefly about retirement and considered it in his ruling, it doesn't appear that the fact of retirement had much of anything to do with his decision. There's nothing in the law that says retirement automatically gives you the right to start decreasing or terminating maintenance. Retirement certainly is a factor, can be used, but no law says that it has to be considered, and even if it's considered, it's only one factor. The Swain case, relied upon by Mr. Conley here, did apply the 40-year-old standard under 1410.122, those four prongs that I mentioned a minute ago. It did leave a couple of things for another day, but those had to do with the issues of early retirement. Now, before Ms. Dickey receives the maintenance, she has a need for income to keep her at the standard of living during the marriage. And Judge Robbins cited three cases for the proposition that the standard of living is more than just meeting minimal needs. It is a matter of what was established during the marriage. Those cases were Weibel, O.R., and Udis, U-D-I-S. The question of the amount of money that Dr. Dickey had initially and then invested, that may have changed some over the years. We don't know the details. There's been little or no communication between these parties for 20-something years. So again, we don't know how much of that money went where. There is a comment in one of the appellate briefs about the policy of maintenance being rehabilitated. There's no Colorado law on point that says that, statute or case. There's also a comment about Colorado having a policy of saving for retirement. There's no law on point about that. And again, Judge Hyatt didn't even address that in 1995. Now, Dr. Dickey, who's withdrawing $10,000 a month from his IRA right now, and he said he spread that over 25 years, even though his life expectancy is only 16, he could take $16,000 instead of $10,000, and we spell this out in the brief. Pay the $6,000 a month of maintenance, still have the other $10,000, and the numbers come out that he still would have enough to last the entire 16 years of his life expectancy. We think that the law, common sense, and fairness all lead to the point that it would be improper for Dr. Dickey to have his millions while Mrs. Dickey is still working, still has debts, at least the two house mortgages, she's 5 years younger than he, and for him to not pay any maintenance simply on the basis of what's being called, he has no earned income. That is not the acid test, that's not the end of the discussion at all. I do have a claim for attorney fees. I'll just make 2 points rather briefly. One is that obviously Dr. Dickey has 4 or 5 times the assets that Ms. Dickey has now. He was lucky in his investment, she was not. Her retirement account went up, came down again, it's back where it started 20 years ago. But the second one, arguing attorney fees is based on the statute of frivolous litigation. What we're hearing here from the appellant is an attempt literally to override with cases from other states around the country our statute that has a simple, straightforward, and solid 40-year history of how to modify. These new statutes I think are part of my claim for being frivolous.
Why isn't this a good faith attempt to extend the law or revise the law in this area? Why wouldn't it qualify on the other sides as a good faith attempt to extend or revise the law in this area?
Well, one thing, even under the Swing case, that case did use the standard under 1410.122. It didn't change or extend or do anything in the law. The magistrate's finding, which are cited or quoted toward the end of the appellate decision, simply said, yes, retirement is a factor that can be counted, but that doesn't change the law.
No, and he admitted retirement is not the be-all, end-all, right. But I think his position was also grounded in some Colorado law that said you can't dig into his separate marital property to pay for maintenance. Now he pursued that argument. Why is that frivolous? Especially when you said it's hard to tell what's principal, what's interest.
We don't know what his property is, what is separate.
It's frivolous to argue.
He was awarded this amount in the permanent orders, and that amount is now 4 times that, and we don't have the details, and neither did the other side present any as to what that meant or how it changed. These new statutes do not apply, either one of them, either on...
Counsel, you're kind of over your time now.
I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Conley?
Your Honor, regarding whether the original order is permanent or not, it's in the briefs, this argument has been brought up. I've read the order a few times. I don't see anything in there that Judge Hyatt in the original 95 order called it lifetime or permanent maintenance. He did say that it would terminate upon death or remarriage, which is boilerplate language from almost every order. And he did say there might be some entanglement going further, but that doesn't mean lifetime.
Well, does it matter, counsel? Because if you're going in for a motion to modify maintenance, don't you have to show the statutory grounds regardless of what the order says?
You do. I don't think our statute says anything about permanent maintenance. The case that Mr. Barnes brought up, the Fisher case, in fact, is an open-ended maintenance case. And the court found in that case, when the trial court left it open-ended, the court of appeals said, well, you should have some duration set. And it can be lifetime. So in other words, what they were saying is you could make a lifetime order, but because you left it open-ended, as is the case here, it's modifiable under 1410.122.
Well, the trial court didn't find that it wasn't modifiable, did it? It just didn't find the grounds to modify.
Right, exactly.
So why is that even an issue we need to talk about?
I don't know why it's an issue.
Okay.
Because we don't talk about permanent maintenance. I mean, our statute doesn't really say that. It just says it's modifiable under 1410.122. The other thing that I'd like to comment on, for your honors, is the fact that this issue with the going outside the jurisdiction, making public policy, etc. I think that, although I did mention that at the trial level, that's not the core of the argument, and that's not the core of the argument today. In fact, it's the opposite, because the one case that talks about this, the one instructed case in Colorado, is the Swing case. There is the Falwell case, and we do have cases where the court reserves jurisdiction to modify, given when somebody retires, like in Falwell, where the court said that retirement, we're going to revisit it, because that's going to be a substantial change. The same thing I'm arguing in Swing, it's not to change policy or outside jurisdictions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And thank you both counsel for your arguments. The case is submitted, and a decision will be forthcoming in due course.